Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Monday, July 6th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Clay Collins.
And I'm Samantha Lane Perfoss.
Native American peoples tend to sit out celebrations of one kind of American independence. Over the holiday weekend, some of their own stories became more central. In one case, they were pushed aside, but Lakota Sioux protesters standing on unceded territory first delayed a major Saturday event at Mount Rushmore in the sacred Black Hills of South Dakota. In another case, they were aided. A District of Columbia sports franchise agreed to a thorough review of an offensive name. Native American leaders had first met with team officials to urge the change back in 1972. Today, pressure from corporations like FedEx, a stadium sponsor, has made change imminent. An insidious false narrative about Native Americans has persisted, that they sit passively at the receiving end of a dominant culture's actions. But the weekend's developments and other quieter stories highlight something else, the power of hope and of agency and inclusion. There's Native Americans' dual fight against COVID-19 and wildfire in the U.S. Northwest. And then there is the very personal. Sean Sherman is an Oglala Lakota chef in Minneapolis. He sees reconnection to culture through food as an antidote to historical oppression. So he and a partner are launching an indigenous food lab. Its work will run from pre-colonial food prep to ethnobotany. Its mission? A culinary revolution meant to inspire and nourish, to strengthen, and not to exclude. There's this huge knowledge base that we should be tapping into, Mr. Sherman told Modern Farmer, to make a better world for everyone. Now to today's stories. Our first story. The choice of running mate always affects presidential candidates' prospects. This time, the process has even higher stakes. It's an acid test of America's commitment to further diversifying the halls of political power.
Speculation has run rampant about Joe Biden's running mate ever since he pledged in a March debate to put a woman on the ticket. Since then, reports suggest at least 13 women have undergone some kind of vetting. Widespread protests over racial justice have amplified calls within the party for Mr. Biden to tap a woman of color. That has elevated the profiles of women like California Senator Kamala Harris, Florida Representative Val Demings, and Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms. This weekend, Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth and former Obama National Security Advisor Susan Rice both appeared on Sunday morning shows, where they were asked about serving as Mr. Biden's running mate. Given his age, even allies admit that the stakes of Mr. Biden's choice are higher than ever. The 77-year-old, who has referred to himself as a transition candidate, would be the oldest president ever at his inauguration. Mr. Biden's campaign has said he will announce his pick early next month. There's an extra special aspect to the selection this election, says Mo Vela, who served as a senior advisor to the former vice president during the Obama administration. It's an outweighed factor. This story was reported by Story Hinckley for The Monitor.
America holds no monopoly on the policing debate. The idea that some jobs that police do should instead be done by specialists with specific social skills is standard operating practice in European countries. We wanted to explore how that works.
The role of the police in society, a burning topic in the United States right now, has long been a subject of debate in Europe, too. And the direction that some countries there have taken could offer paths forward for America. At the heart of the new approach, known as problem-oriented policing, is an effort to grapple with the root causes of crime, not just its symptoms. In Finland, for example, homeless and drug-addicted people are given somewhere to live and then offered treatment. Problem-oriented policing has cut crime and disorder by a third in the places it has been tried, in the United Kingdom, Canada, and the U.S. In a parallel move, a number of governments have taken mental health emergencies out of police hands, leaving them freer to tackle criminality while specialists deal with the crisis calls. In Britain, about 40% of calls to the police are mental health related. Could it work in America? It's expensive, requiring European-level tax rates and social services funding. And it takes time, cautions Megan O'Neill, a policing expert at the University of Dundee in Scotland. It's important to have a long-term plan and not a knee-jerk reaction, she says. The story was reported by Lenora Chu in Berlin for The Monitor.
We've looked at mutual aid networks a few times in recent weeks. This next report is from Mexico City. Residents, used to getting little or late support from their government, try to support their neighbors in a crisis. COVID-19 is no exception.
Mexico City is known for its cacophony of sounds, unique to each category of street hawker, from the high-pitched whistles of sweet potato vendors to the thumping beat of horn-honking, drum-pounding bands playing for tips, and the ding-a-ling of trash collectors' bells. Many of these vendors are among the 60% of Mexico's workforce that labors in the informal economy, making them particularly vulnerable to the economic effects of the pandemic. While countries around the globe are passing vast stimulus packages and offering businesses tax breaks, Mexico has largely left individuals to take on the burden themselves. But a long history of absentee governments, along with natural disasters that have demanded immediate action from citizens, has combined to create a sense of resilience and community support among neighbors. From online support for street musicians with no public to play for, to vegetable markets offering delivery for people without credit cards, to neighbors offering to run errands or barter cooking for childcare, creativity and adaptability abound amid the pandemic. There's a lot of support among families and communities, and I think that's part of who we are as Mexicans, says Hector Bialos, a volunteer with a mutual aid organization. The story was reported by Whitney Ulick in Mexico City for The Monitor.
A ban on single-use plastic in Kenya, a delisting of the scales of the highly trafficked pangolin as a medicinal in China, and a telling archaeological discovery in Italy are just three of this week's global progress points. Enjoy the uplift. You can find the full set in today's issue. Now, commentary on the joys of nature from The Monitor's editorial board. As the July 4th holiday fades into memory, summer starts in earnest. Americans hear the call of the natural world. Leave those four walls behind, seek new vistas. We need the tonic of wildness. We can never have enough of nature, advised perhaps its most famous advocate, Henry David Thoreau. Movements such as Japan's Shinrin-yoku, or forest bathing, tout the therapeutic effects of immersion into the great outdoors. But not everyone has equal access to nature or feels equally comfortable going into it, problems reinforced in many cases by poverty and prejudice. In a 2014 report, the National Park Service estimated that 95% of visitors to its parks were white, and a 2011 NPS survey concluded that three times as many Black people as white felt unsafe in these parks. The United States is moving toward becoming a majority-minority nation, non-whites outnumbering whites. The love and protection of the natural world will be in the hands of an ever wider spectrum of Americans. Can people be expected to love and guard something they don't visit? Helping a diverse America experience nature's wonders benefits everyone. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for listening to today's Daily. Our Supreme Court watcher, Henry Gass, is tracking a pretty big week. Watch for his reports. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how we shouldn't underestimate the impact of heartfelt prayer based on an understanding of God's all power. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Samantha Lane Perfoss and Jeff Turton.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor, copyright 2020.